and welcome to the News Quiz USA from the BBC and WNYC. I'm Andy Borowitz, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And to our British listeners, if you didn't know it was Thanksgiving, don't feel bad. According to a recent poll, 30% of Americans could not name the correct date of the 4th of July.
Is that true?
That is true.
Cool.
And tonight we've got a panel every bit as well-informed as that. So let's meet our panel. First on my right, comedian and the CEO of Cultivated Wit. His latest book, How to Be Black, is described as a practical guide for anyone looking to befriend or work with a black person.
Very useful.
Very helpful.
Very useful. Well-researched.
You know what? I've read the book, and it has totally prepared me for working with him tonight. Let's give it up for my man, Baratunde Thurston.
Thanks for not saying my bro.
My bro. But did I connect you? That my man thing was sort of current.
No, well,
wasn't it?
For those, you can't see this, but he had a fist motion, like a black power kind of fist.
That's right.
And I felt deeply connected to you in a kind
That's
of a,
good.
Almost like a nearly sexual way.
That's good. Because of my fist. That's interesting. Well, you know, it's funny because you thought that was kind of a black power thing.
No.
I just thought I was doing Arsenio. So that just shows you. It's all in the translation. If only this were on TV.
Good to be here, man. Good to be here.
Baratunde Thurston. Yeah. And next to him, she's a stand-up comedian who has had her own MTV show. And now she's scaling the dizzying heights of public radio. Sarah Schaefer. And opposite them, on my left, she's a comedian and director of the new film, The Muslims Are Coming. That's right. She's of Iranian descent, and her hobbies include reading, dancing, and enriching uranium for peaceful purposes.
Thank you.
You're applauding the Iranians enriching uranium.
For peaceful purposes.
For people. It's Negin Farsad. Negin.
I'm so Muslim.
And finally, he's a comedian whose latest album is called Low Hanging Fruit. Yes, he's openly Armenian. Let's hear it for James Adomian. James.
Hello. Bye.
Okay, Baratunde, this question is for you.
Great.
What's like the Iraq War, Hurricane Katrina, and the Battle of Waterloo, but worse?
That would be the president's attempt to provide health care for all Americans.
That's right, Obamacare. It's been compared to all those things, right?
It's far worse. It's
far worse.
Because it's not for freedom.
Right.
And so President Obama is facing his lowest approval rating of the history of President Obama. He's at about 37%. His Affordable Care Act is also suffering the lowest ratings of its very short life. Website problems, as well as promises not quite delivered, are making the American people feel not so great about hope and change.
Now, but let me ask you one thing. I just noticed this because I was reading this on the internet. You know, his bad poll numbers might have been affected by the way they asked the question, how do you feel about the disastrous rollout of Obamacare? I just feel I have to say that.
Well, the administration is now backing away from Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
It's now the Affordable Care Act, officially from the White House, and he is now President Affordable.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Boy, I didn't know the fix would be that easy, but that changes everything, really.
Semantics are most things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel? Now, there have been all these people, I don't want to name names, but a lot of the right-wingers in the country have said, this is like the Iraq War.
Yeah.
It's like his Hurricane Katrina. It's like the Battle of Waterloo,
mm-hmm.
I've heard
mm-hmm.
that. You know, to me, the main difference between Obamacare and the war in Iraq, to me, is that the American people, you know, they'll tolerate you invading the wrong country and staying for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you make them wait half an hour on a website, no way. No way. Not in this country.
We're used to instant, you know?
Yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair.
It's
but
those,
it is.
Those Cyber Monday deals have really poisoned the well.
That's right. What guys, have you noticed, have you in reading about this, have you noticed Obamacare is being compared to everything terrible historically? Have you heard any other comparisons?
Compared to my TV show.
It's been compared to your TV show. Who came up worse? Was it your
TV? Our ratings were just as bad. We got canceled. But it was because we were trying to get health care through.
That's it. Boy, it is just
teenagers,
it is just terrible.
They didn't care. They didn't care about it.
Are they going to cancel Obama, too?
No, I don't know. Yeah. You know, this is a statistic I read. This is troubling. Actually, more people have now come up with disparaging Obamacare analogies than have signed up for Obamacare. I think that's a really bad thing.
It's been compared to slavery, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has. Right.
How
same
is
thing.
That?
That's totally
now,
the
now,
same thing.
I don't mean to, Baratunde, I don't mean to throw this directly to you, but in terms of
because
slavery,
I'm such a historian.
But in terms of, you're a historian and you keep things. But in terms of slavery versus Obamacare. They each have their strengths and weaknesses, I guess.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
And in fairness, you know, I understand slavery had kind of a slow rollout, too. Like, some of the ships didn't arrive on time.
No, that's
right. It took a while to get it going. Do you think people should give this a chance? I mean, slavery had many years to take hold.
It had a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And the nation was made stronger because of it. But
right.
It's because we stuck with it.
Right. That's the thing.
It's because we committed to following through.
That's
and I think, you know, we're in an instant gratification culture right now. And people don't have the patience that we had during slavery times.
You know, I think really went over the line? I saw this on Fox News the other day, and they had this Republican, and he compared Obamacare to Johnny Depp's performance in The Lone Ranger. And
that's
you know
not
what?
Right.
No,
that's
because more right. people have signed up for Obamacare than saw that
movie.
It really wasn't fair. Well, Baratunde, I've got to say, you are correct in your answer. Obama's poll numbers are at an all-time low as website problems continue to hamper the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. Now, the rollout of Obamacare has gotten off to a rocky start, and we all agree with that. But the White House just announced that they do have the solution. They are going to spend more time, as you said, rebranding and remarketing Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think they should start by changing the name Obamacare, which combines two things Americans find foreign, Obama and the concept of caring. How about this for a more American-sounding name, Gun Fat?
Yeah, like Gun Fat. Gun Fat for president.
Gun Fat. Yeah. Gunfat.gov. Gunfat.gov. All right, shall we move on? Sarah.
Yes.
A bitter rivalry broke out this week between Canadian and American politicians. What was it over?
It was over whose politician used more crack.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
On the side while leading their local constituents.
Now, who are the players?
Rob Ford is probably the more famous one. He's the mayor of Toronto, and he's been covered a lot. I mean, it's as if he was written by a comedian. So we know about him and his debacle.
And he smokes crack, right?
Yeah, he smokes crack.
He smoked crack.
He may have. What do you do with that? You eat it? I don't know.
Well, actually, you know, I
in one of his drunken stupors.
Yeah. Well, I have that quote from him. He said, you know, he was asked, and we'll get back to this because I'm interested in this rivalry between the two countries. Yeah. He was asked at a press conference, "Have you smoked crack?" And he replied, "Probably during one of my drunken stupors." And you know, when you're a politician. Drunken stupor is not something you should pluralize, really. You should just say that one isolated drunken stupor once upon a time. Anyway, go ahead. So Rob Ford, we know about him.
We know about him, but there's a new guy in town. His name is Trey Raydell, and he's a congressman from Florida, of course. This guy's great. First of all, he refers to himself as a hip-hop conservative. And his favorite place to vacation is in Colombia. Pretty sure he has a Scarface poster putting those two things together. He was arrested for cocaine, he bought cocaine. He has cocaine. He's admitted to being an addict. He's in rehab. He's on 1-year probation. My first question is, I don't know if being a cokehead is actually very hip-hop. I feel like that's like, you should just call yourself conservative. that seems more like a Wall Street thing as opposed to, but yes, his claims to love hip-hop, which makes him, you know, cool with the black folk.
Mm-hmm. As a black folk, I can say it's definitely true.
Yeah,
it's definitely true.
It's how he got elected, you know?
What part was more appealing to you, Baratundi? Hip hop or conservative? What was the part?
Conservative,
that you conservative.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Resonates that was sort of deeply within the black community.
You know, when he came up with that hip hop conservative thing, you know, I know that I'm sure he thinks that he's being original, but actually, Margaret Thatcher also called herself that, so that's not at all fresh.
Really hacky. Yeah,
no, it's very, very hacky. But so, what does that mean? That like he, Sarah, you know, when he says he's a hip hop conservative, does he? Is he a real aficionado of rap music?
He loves Public Enemy. This is a specific thing he has mm-hmm. said, which obviously, you know, the lyrics of Public Enemy relate to his personal experience in life.
Well, you know, I did.
I don't know if you've seen a picture of this guy.
You mentioned Public Enemy and those lyrics. One of the songs that he mentions as very formative for him was "Fight the Power."
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. And I thought, wait a minute, "Fight the Power." Having subliminal Tea Party messages? How could that possibly be? I actually went back and looked at the lyrics, and I was really surprised at what I found. Can I run some of this by you? Okay. This is all from Fight the Power. I'm ready and hyped, plus I'm amped. Most of my heroes don't appear on no stamps. That is a thinly veiled argument for cutting food stamps.
I think.
Okay. By the way, I read that, I think, much in the way that Trey Raydell would rap it, if given an opportunity. May I continue this analysis of Fight the Power?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get this party started right. That means let's move the Republican Party in a rightward direction. And finally, we got to pump the stuff to make us tough. That means let's snort some coke. So
exactly.
I think he's right. I think it was a very, very formative thing. What do you think? Do you think that, you know, he handled this whole thing in a very different way from our Canadian friend Rob Ford? Rob Ford has been defiant. He's like saying, I only smoked some crack because I was drunk, and I only saw the prostitutes because I was on crack, and I was only drinking because I was with a prostitute. It was like a Mobius strip that just continued endlessly, a Mobius strip of vice. But Trey Riddell has been saying things like, I've done wrong, I'm going into rehab, I'm going to give all of my money to charity. I think he's really been a about the whole thing. Like, doesn't this make us look bad compared to Canada?
No, but like the reaction to Trey Raydell has been super lame in general. Like Speaker Boehner, the House Majority Speaker, he was just like, oh, I don't know if we should ask him to resign or if we should have the Ethics Committee punish him or maybe we should just shut down the government again. I don't know. We'll do one of those things. And I mean, and I think also we should keep in mind, it's like, okay, he bought cocaine, but it's not like he tweeted a picture of his right? That's something that you that's punishable by death.
That's
but
a high crime.
Cocaine is
that.
Like,
you literally get stoned
mm-hmm.
for that.
You know, I was maybe the only guy who was suspicious of this dude because I noticed, you know, during the government shutdown, he was like the only one who was pleading to shut down the DEA. The only guy there. And that made me a little bit suspicious.
But the beautiful part is he's taking a leave of absence from his job.
Mm-hmm. What's he going to do during that time? He's going to spend more time smoking crack with prostitutes, or
with Rob Ford.
He's going to spend more time with Rob Ford.
And he's donating his income to charity, but I think the charity is a charity to help people find illegal drugs. That's what the charity does.
That's good.
I want to get arrested for drugs. I'm like, no, I just funded this Kickstarter. It's great. Like, we're good. Like, on balance, we're good.
Be like, I work with the congressman. This is an urgent briefcase full of papers.
Well, Sarah, you are correct. Republican Congressman Trey Riddell has taken a leave of absence after a charge of cocaine possession following hot on the heels of Toronto Mayor Rob Ford's confessions of crack use. That's right, Rob Ford, a prominent Canadian politician, confessing to rampant drug use. Embarrassing. Embarrassing for America, who used to be the leader in drug-taking politicians. Let's look at the history here, folks. George Washington grew hemp. Bill Clinton smoked pot. Thomas Jefferson shot horse tranquilizer in his ass. Wikipedia, folks, look it up. The point is, Trey Riddell has nothing to be ashamed of. He's just reclaiming a part of American history. Nice try, Canada. But when it comes to drugged up politicians, we own you. That's right. You know how our Constitution guarantees the pursuit of happiness? Well, in the first draft, it was the pursuit of ecstasy. That's right. Thank you very much. Trey Riddell, an American hero.
Hey, Andy.
Yes.
I want to throw in, I grew up in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. home of the original crack-smoking mayor.
That's right. You had Marion Barry.
We did it first.
Bitch set me up, right?
Toronto, get your own
Well, you know, that's the thing. I was thinking about Marion Barry, and I think the most unfortunate thing about the Rob Ford incident is just reinforced the stereotype that Canada does everything 30 years after we do. It was the worst thing. It was so sad. Shall we move on? How's our panel doing, by the way? How are they doing? Next question is for James. James, what's been bugging the British since 2007?
I think this has to be nothing else than the National Security Agency, the NSA, here in the United States.
They have been bugging the British? Tell me what this is.
They're really sticking in their craw. Since 2007, there's been an arrangement of sorts between the British government and the NSA that information collected from law-abiding Britons, including telephone information and email addresses, can be kept for investigations and coming up with contact chaining, which is how they sort of map out.
What does that mean? That sounds like the human centipede or something. Contact chaining? What is that?
It's so sort of mapping out connections of political and criminal activities.
Okay, so what you're saying is, like, if you receive a holiday letter, okay, and in the CCs or BCCs there also happens to be somebody's Saudi gym instructor, then that means you, in the eyes of the NSA, are
they
a terrorist of some kind.
They've got your information.
Okay, because of contact chaining. Okay, that's how it works. Well, what has been the response so far to this? First of all, where do these revelations come from? Let me guess.
Edward Snowden.
Again?
Yes.
Boy, just when you think he has nothing left to say, comes back with something new. He's like Paul McCartney. He just keeps on. That is
slow
amazing.
Releases, yeah.
That is amazing. So he slow releases. So this is he yet again.
It's another document trove from the Edward Snowden documents, The Guardian. And the British government's admitted that they allowed the NSA since 2007 to keep this information on law-abiding citizens. And of course, before 2007, they weren't allowed to keep it. But
were those air quotes you were doing?
I did air quotes on the radio. I think that was a bold move.
Can I just stop for a moment? For our British audience, I think a little clarification is in order. I mean, this report makes it seem like our government is very interested in the private details of your lives. But I want to make it clear that we, the American people, have no interest in you whatsoever. I mean, for us to care about a British person, they pretty much have to live at Downton Abbey. I just want to make that very, very, very clear. We don't care. We don't care about you. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I could smooth the waters a little bit. Well, you are correct, James. The latest leaked documents from Edward Snowden have revealed that Britain allowed the NSA to keep the cell phone numbers and emails of its citizens even when they weren't terror suspects. Now, the revelations about the spying deal between the U.S. and the U.K. came out the same week that another great partnership drew to a close. Yes, I'm talking about the storybook marriage between Rupert Murdoch and Wendy Deng. Yeah, can we get an aww?
I'm not
going to
do that.
Because if those two crazy kids couldn't make it work. I mean, really, guys, that was a really great love story. I mean, it seems like just yesterday that brave Wendy was defending poor Rupert from a pie-throwing assailant in Parliament. And what terrible deed was Parliament accusing Rupert of? That's right, listening in on private conversations. Hello? It's fine when the NSA does it, but somehow it's a crime when it's done by an evil Australian troll.
I take offense at the term troll.
We here at News Quiz USA salute Rupert Murdoch, a trailblazer in the fast-growing field of electronic surveillance. And we know he won't be single for long. He's already got a lot of phone numbers. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Rupert and Wendy, we wish you well. This is the News Quiz USA from WNYC and the BBC. We'll be back after this. This is Andy Borowitz, and we'd love to know what you think of the News Quiz. Go to WNYC.org and leave us your comment. Thanks. They'll probably change that a little in the editing. Welcome back to the News Quiz USA from WNYC and the BBC with me, Andy Borowitz, and I'm here with Baratunde Thurston, Sarah Schaefer, Nagin Farsad, and James Adomian. Baratunde.
Yeah.
What is about to replace crying babies as the most annoying thing in the skies?
Well, as some people will know, the Federal Aviation Authority allows us to now use our cell phones during taxiing and landing. The Communications Commission in the United States is considering letting us talk on the phone in the air itself. So between, like actually during the flight, use your personal device and not type in for the Wi-Fi in the air at $5,000 a second, which is great for the economy, to let you talk to your friends who are not there.
Okay, now just, if I can just, for clarification, for our British audience, you call these devices mobile phones. And we call them cell phones. So for this segment, we're going to call them cell phones. Okay, thank you. Just want to clarify that.
I really appreciate you doing that.
Okay, good. Just to make it clear what we're talking about. Wasn't there supposed to be some concern that this was using a cell phone on a plane was going to somehow interfere with the delicate equipment? Is that?
I think the only way a cell phone interferes with the delicate equipment is if the pilot's the one using the phone. Texting and flying, not the best idea. Being a passenger and flying, probably not too disruptive.
It will still be, no, correct me if I'm wrong, it will still be somewhat frowned upon for pilots to text and fly at the same time?
I assume so, but don't know that to be a fact. No, the I think it's very good for the most part, but maybe we'll have quiet cars on the plane, and it'll give the airlines an excuse to charge us even more money for that 1980s experience.
It's funny because, like, people, you know, we've always wondered, like, how we can make our planes more like call centers. And so I'm glad we finally figured that out. But, like, the backlash has really been, like, that planes are the last place that you don't have to listen to a loud conversation, which really makes the story about the demise of the public library system, I think. That's, you can also not listen to loud conversations there.
I'm concerned for myself. Because whenever there's just a tiny little bit of turbulence, I will call my family and say goodbye. Because I am not a comfortable flyer. It will be a bad thing for me. And it will be upsetting to the people around me. I'll be saying goodbye, and then they'll be like, she must know something. I don't.
Well, I'm nervous when I fly. I feel like the last thing I need is like phantom vibrating in my pants. Now this is not going to be good. I'm jumpy enough already.
One of the benefits will be if you've ever sat next to the chatty person on the plane, who wants to talk your ear off about things you don't care about. Now you can pretend to talk to people who are not there and not be harassed by that stranger. Like, I'm sorry, I'm on the phone. I can't talk right now to your little story. I'm on the phone.
Well, on the flip side, I feel like this is an open assault on the sanctity of the Mile High Club. Because, right? Because if you're busy talking on the phone, like, you're not going to be able to go into a bathroom and have sex with a stranger. And so where are our values is what I'm asking you.
Right.
Yeah, this is anti-sex.
I think this has got to be a plot from Richard Branson. He's the only person standing to profit from airplanes mixed with cell phones. And he's always struck me as kind of a James Bond supervillain.
I rule the airways, and I rule the cell phones.
You know, actually, Baratini, you brought up a really good point about, you know, passengers will be using their phones, but also pilots. That does concern me. Based on the performance of pilots currently who are not on their phones at all, like on Wednesday, a pilot of a Boeing 747 landed his plane at the wrong airport, one that did not have a long enough runway to accommodate a Boeing 747.
Right.
And this is him with no distractions whatsoever. So you know what? If pilots are on the phone, I'm on a train. That's my policy.
To be fair to him, they look pretty much the same from the sky.
What, airport? Airports? Yeah, it is fair. That is totally fair. I don't know. I mean, you know what? I guess they're saying that there's a chance that cell phones can make a plane crash. But you know what? I guess the only way to find out is by letting people use them. See what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, let's leave it up to science and find out.
Let the free market decide.
Exactly. Exactly. So wait, so Sarah, you're opposed because you're going to be calling your family when you die. Yeah. Baratundi, how about you?
Oh, I'm all for it.
You're all for it. And because?
Because it's awesome.
Because it's awesome.
And because, seriously, like, I'm already paying for my data plan. Why am I going to pay the little go-go in-flight wireless nonsense? It's a racket. I'm for freedom.
Right, for freedom. Yeah, absolutely. Nagin, because the sex thing, you think this is going to have a chilling effect on sex in the air. So
well,
you're opposed.
I mean, I was a raging slut for a period of my life, so just I would say yes.
Okay.
I wasn't.
And James,
that's not true.
James, how do you feel?
I could go either way. I would say if you're going to make flying that annoying, you might as well bring back smoking and just make it cigars and pipes.
The final frontier.
Yep.
Also bonfires.
Exactly. Well, Baratunde, you are absolutely right. Making a cell phone call while on a plane could become a reality under proposals currently being made by the FCC. Now, here's one last piece of information. Alan Weber, who is a principal analyst at something called Asymmetric Insights, and those are really the best insights, aren't they? Asymmetric ones.
That sounds like a code name for something nefarious.
It does. He's a principal analyst at Asymmetric Insights, says, the likelihood that anything you could carry on a plane would knock out the signal is pretty slim. There's frankly a bigger chance of your house being hit by a block of the blue ice released from a plane as waste. Hey, dude, thanks for giving me something new to worry about. Thank you, Alan Weber of Asymmetric Insights, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Andy.
Yes.
Just continuing with my theme of disruption.
This is for the Philippines once
this
again.
This is for my people. What if there's a cell phone in that block of ice because people are dropping their cell phones down the airplane toilet?
That would be awesome, as
Great.
You said.
Thank you. Okay. I just want to put that out there.
All right. You did, and you really put it out there.
I did.
And we heard it.
And clearly I was alone, but that's fine.
That's good.
I'm comfortable with that.
That's good. All right, moving on. Sarah. Who has been suffering from a failure to launch?
That would be the Air Force's nuclear missile force, which I didn't know. I guess I subconsciously knew they existed. there's a whole team of people whose job is to just sit there and wipe the cobwebs off of all of our nuclear weapons and be ready to go. At any moment, and they did.
Wait, ready to go? What does that mean? What do they do?
They're ready to launch. If it's time to blow up the world, they are there and ready to go. Now, they did a study, and they found that a large majority of the people working in these jobs are suffering from terrible burnout. They're very unhappy. There's a high incidences of personal and professional misconduct. Lots of trouble. There's been reports that it's an environment of perfectionism, that if you even make one mistake, you're worried about you're going to lose your career. And I'm like, yeah, buddy.
Yes.
Yeah. You need to not mess up when you're manning the thing that could kill everyone.
That was really close. We're going to go ahead and give it to you.
Yeah. No. But yeah, so it's, you know, they're kind of, the Cold War's over. They're lonely down there. They're like, they're in the underground in North Dakota.
We kept them there since 1989?
Yeah, they're just
down there.
You
know, really, being above ground in North Dakota is not
I know.
I mean, so just imagine.
I mean,
doing a map.
It's terrible. You know, and I think, you know, we need to do some kind of deal with Google where they go and they make these guys feel real good, unlimited food, you know, real cool, fancy offices that they get to be in and you know, free yoga and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Yeah, ping pong. Because don't we need to, I mean, I'm sorry, but shouldn't these guys be happy? You don't want one of them going falling down the movie. I'm referring to the movie Falling Down.
Right.
I call it Falling Down because I'm from the South. But we don't want them going crazy one day and just being like, this! And then they just launch it.
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right. No, it's a problem. It's a just, real problem.
They
but
just
I mean,
turn on Nirvana.
I mean, you have to put yourself in their shoes. I mean, you know, they have been training for years mm-hmm. To do one thing, which is to press a button. That is their total job. Mm-hmm. And they have never had an opportunity to press a button. And, you know, it's understandable. That would be, it would be like studying for years to become a doctor and never getting a chance to stick your hand up someone's ass. I mean, that would just be very, very frustrating. And I mean, and then where do these guys go? I was wondering, like, where do you go? Let's say you burn out, as a lot of these guys are doing, and you like you put your resume up on, you know, on LinkedIn or whatever, and then you have a job interview, and the guy's looking at your resume, and he's like, I see you've been trained to press a button. But you've never pressed a button. I mean, it would just be a very hard, where do you go? I mean, do you get a job as the office microwave operator? I mean, what is the future if you've been trained to press a button but you've never actually pressed a button? What is the future of that? I feel like they'd only be appreciated if they moved to North Korea. I feel like here they're just kind of, you know, isolated and alienated. What do you guys think?
The grass is always greener in North Korea, as my mother always said. Yeah, comment at it. No, it's funny because these are the only guys in America who are like really depressed when they hear about like peace talks with Iran or whatever. Like, that's the worst news. But like, chin up, because just today, I think, or yesterday, the Iranian supreme leader said that he's not going to, you know, back down on any of his nuclear demands. So fingers crossed, there could be some sort of nuclear conflagration. We'll see.
Yeah,
why are you sounding so gleeful about that, Nagin Farsad?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just quietly enriching uranium underneath the table. So don't mind me.
Do you have your own recipe?
A dash of cinnamon.
But you know, it's interesting because they do. We don't want these guys flipping out. I think we should try to find some way to I don't know, improve their morale. Yeah, you know, it seems like the obvious solution to me would be to have a nuclear war. I mean, not. I don't mean like a full-on Doctor Strangelove thing, but just throw them a bone. You know, maybe just a little one, like you know,
crisis.
Yeah, just a little. No, just like maybe just we attack France. Let's say something like that. Just something small like that.
You could also move. I feel like you could move the bunkers to a better place.
Better than North Dakota?
I know it's a stretch, but there's like Miami.
How sad are you?
Like Santa Monica or Portland?
Yeah. Well, how sad are you that if you live in a state where it's like, this is where we need to store these deadly weapons? Because, you know, just in case, no one's going to care.
You know, like, wait really a minute, what about South Dakota? Yeah. They're not so awesome.
Or the Arctic. I wonder if that's... How do we know that's not what happened? How would you know that the nuclear strike force is burned out unless somebody was like, launch the missiles, and they were like, I can't do it, man.
And that's why...
Maybe it's good. Keep them burned out. We don't need a nuclear war.
Well, you are correct. A U.S. Air Force study has revealed a high incidence of burnout among nuclear launch officers with their fingers on the triggers of 450 weapons around the U.S. This is interesting. Former Minuteman III launch officer Andrew Neal, 28, blames the low morale among his coworkers on the pointlessness of their chosen vocation. He complains, and I quote, "We practice for all-out nuclear war, but we know that isn't going to happen." Well, boo-hoo-hoo. Let's have a pity party, right? Okay, so your job is meaningless? Chin up, Jean-Paul Sartre. That's called having a job. Maybe you should try having your finger on the button of a fry master at KFC. After 8 hours of that, you'll be begging to go back to your damn bunker. Goodbye. All right. This is the News Quiz USA from WNYC and the BBC. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to the News Quiz USA from WNYC and the BBC with me, Andy Borowitz. I'm still here with Baratunde Thurston, Sarah Schaefer, Nagin Farsad, and James Adomian. Moving on, Nagin, which former vice president is about to have the most awkward Thanksgiving of 2013?
That would be Dick Cheney. Mm. There's two supporters of Dick Cheney in the audience. It's
no,
very
I think
exciting.
They're applauding the awkward Thanksgiving.
They're applauding awkward Thanksgiving. Yes. Got it. So basically what happened is that Dick Cheney's daughter, Liz Cheney, is running for Senate in Wyoming, a state that is 90% white and 10% Cheney. And while campaigning this week, she announced that she is against same-sex marriage, which is really awkward because she has a sister that is both gay and married. I think what she was trying to do is to appeal to voters by supporting family values without having to support her own family's values. And I think it should be noted, like, that this is, you know, this is weird for Liz Cheney because she actually grew up in Northern Virginia, right? She didn't actually grow up in Wyoming. So she is considered a carpetbagger in Wyoming. But she wants it to be clear that she's not considered a carpet muncher. So she wants to make that clear.
Well, you know, what I like about this, and Nagin, you can walk us through this, but, you know, I guess she came out and gave a speech. Liz, she's the one who's running. She gave a speech where she said that she's opposed to same-sex marriage. And then Mary Cheney, the lesbian, handled this in the way that families do by totally flaming her on Facebook, right? And, you know, it got so acrimonious that I went to the page, and Mary Cheney on Facebook reminded Liz that Liz had attended her same-sex wedding, and then she added, "That gravy boat you gave us was a cheap-ass gift." And then Mary Cheney just kind of went crazy, and she started a new Facebook group, Lesbians Whose Sisters Betray Them to Win a Republican Primary. That got a lot of members right away. And I think it really kind of got ugly, this whole social media fight. After her Facebook comments, Mary Cheney posted a very insulting yarn doll of her sister on Etsy. And I think that really was taking it kind of to a nuclear level.
Well, and then Dick Cheney had to get involved, right, to, like, try and resolve the daughter's dispute. And he said, let's just do it in the old, you know, the way that the Cheneys know how, and one of you shoot the other in the face. Yeah. That was their, that's how they were going to resolve it.
We're all just so happy that they're miserable. We're just like,
it's so satisfying. I just can't think of, I usually don't take pleasure in, like, the pain of others. But in this case, this is awesome. Because Dick Cheney was like Mr. Pro Torture. Liz Cheney's like more Gitmo, like more Guantanamo Bay, please. And now, like, chickens are coming home to roost and they're gay.
Yeah, but I actually... You know, I came upon this story the way I'm sure most of us did. I was Googling the words lesbian fighting. And right, I mean...
Like you do.
You're with me, like I do. And I got really excited when I saw this headline, and I clicked it on, and then I saw the words Dick Cheney, and I was like, oh, what a buzzkill. I mean, that was just so disappointing. But, you know, I think the most disappointing thing for me in this story is that Dick Cheney is behaving in a really sensitive way, and I can't accept that. I just find it hard. That ruined it for me as a story. What do you feel, James? How
well,
are you feeling about
this?
I
am a proud homo American. So when I heard...
Hey, let's have a little support, public radio fans.
No, it's fine.
Man, what is this, Wyoming? Good God.
I am a proud homo American, so it hit kind of close to home when Liz Cheney came out against gay marriage. But I do think it's important that the Cheney daughters, whether they're homophobic or gay, should probably agree that they should turn their dad over for prosecution for war crimes. That would be, yeah. I think that would be a healing gesture.
You know, the real shame of this is that, like, you'd almost think, like, Liz, like, selling out her sister would be worth it if she was, like, locked in some really close race with this dude, you know, Mike Enzi. It turns out the guy she's running against, this other Republican, Mike Enzi, she is running 52 points behind Mike Enzi, and she has just lost the support of Wyoming's four lesbians. So, I mean, she has really blown it.
Well, it's kind of sad. I mean, Enzi, you know, this is a guy who's about 70 years old. He's had this office for a while. He considered himself, he's like a friend of the family, and he was blindsided by the fact that Liz was running. And when you read the reports, it's like he was hurt. He's like, I thought we were friends. And then she did this.
She is trailing behind in the polls, but there's other things she has in store just to make herself more authentic to the Wyoming, is that right?
That's exactly correct.
That's what I say.
To like make herself more authentic to the voters, she's gonna rustle up some cattle. Mm-hmm. She's also gonna scale the Grand Tetons, mm-hmm. And she's just gonna detain a Muslim, to ingratiate herself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good idea. I just think the regrettable part, you know, it's funny. It's like we can look at these stories, and we all have family problems, of course.
Not all of us, I guess.
But you know, the thing is, like, whenever you're having an argument with somebody, you just have to be careful about what you post on Facebook, right? I mean, let's face it, because you know, when you post something on the internet, there's no context. You know, there's no sense of tone. And everything is very much open to misinterpretation, I think. I mean, if you type out something like, for example, gay people should burn in hell. And taken out of context, that sounds like a terrible thing to say. But so you just have to, I think that's my takeaway from all of this. Sarah, have you ever had any problems like this when you've run for Senate a mm-hmm. number of times mm-hmm. in Wyoming?
Brutal.
Did any of your siblings ever wind up in a real sort of tussle with you?
No, thankfully we don't do stuff like that on Facebook. All of our fighting is just behind each other's backs mm-hmm. to each other. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there's no gay people in my family. I mean, that's the first. No, just kidding.
That's you are one of the fortunate ones.
Yeah.
Because that tears so many families apart. How did you guys work that out? Was that just a ground rule at the beginning?
Did you
have like family meeting?
Yeah, family meeting. Yeah. Everyone has to choose right now because mm-hmm. it is a choice. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank our Lord Jesus for the fact that my dad is not on Facebook. Is Dick Cheney on Facebook? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that's a nightmare
Dick
of a page.
Dick Cheney's on everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He's Dick Cheney.
He's spying on it, probably.
Doesn't he have a bionic heart that maybe operates Facebook? Or
that's one of the Snowden revelations that's coming to come out. All Facebook posts go through Dick Cheney's artificial heart before they reach their intended target.
It's what keeps him strong. It actually powers him.
It's his lifeblood.
Yeah. Hey, that artificial heart is breaking right now, my friend. So let's be nice. Well, you are correct, of course. Liz Cheney, daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney, has denounced same-sex marriage despite having a gay sister. And yes, it is going to be an awkward Thanksgiving at the Cheney house. But before we attack Liz Cheney, let's try to see this from her point of view. She's trying to appeal to Wyoming voters who do not want to see their state associated with same-sex marriage. They want to go back to the good old days when Wyoming was best known as the setting of Brokeback Mountain. Just one more thing I have to say, because I know we've been beating up on Dick Cheney quite a bit.
Deservedly.
But he, you know, I've got to say, whatever you, you know, whatever your disagreements with him are about this, I mean, I think he handled this with admirable sensitivity, because he went on Facebook this week to post the supportive message, "I'm with the dyke on this." And I thought that was really, that was really,
really
good.
Beautiful.
Dick Cheney, ladies and gentlemen, what a man. I'm with the dyke. Now, speaking of Thanksgiving, and since this is a little bit about educating our friends across the pond, as we sometimes call it, they don't really have Thanksgiving in Great Britain.
Very ungrateful people.
They don't. Well, they don't. They don't feel they have anyone to thank. But they don't have Thanksgiving. I mean, they have some holidays, some really, you know, sweet holidays that we don't have, like Guy Fawkes Day, where they burn a Catholic in effigy. I mean, we don't have that holiday.
It's more interactive holiday.
No, it's more interactive. But we have, you know, we have Thanksgiving. I just thought to sort of help, you know, maybe bring Thanksgiving to life. Some of you might have some stories from your Thanksgivings of days gone by. Baratunde, do you? I know you celebrate Kwanzaa.
Yeah,
I'm being very sensitive about that. But do you also celebrate Thanksgiving, or do you just have a lot of justifiable grievances that you express on that day?
I feel like for our audience in the UK, Kwanzaa is a holiday in the United States, strictly for black people, who've been victimized by their white hosts on radio programs. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a day of vengeance, and it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what about Thanksgiving, where you give thanks to people who hired you and might hire you again someday?
It depends on the year, right? Uh-huh. Depends on the year. Yeah.
But do you have any memories of Thanksgiving?
I have blocked out my Thanksgivings. No, my Thanksgiving, I go to visit my sister in Lansing, Michigan. Mm-hmm. I do some yoga with her, very black thing to do. For those who, again, explaining to the UK audience, most black people do yoga, in the United States, at least.
Mm-hmm. And most black people here really love Coldplay.
Yeah.
That's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We're really into that. That's more of a black thing. I don't really get it. But
you wouldn't understand. But there are Jewish things I don't get. So,
that's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, we can trade on that.
So you just like hang out and you do yoga? And
yeah, hang out with my sister. We eat some food. We watch some football.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very nice.
Take a nap. It's really low key.
That's great. What about you, Sarah? What do you do?
About 4 years ago, I discovered something about Thanksgiving. You don't have to go home. You can come up with an excuse. And now I stay at home with my boyfriend, and it's just me and him. We don't get a turkey. We go to the grocery store a couple of days before, and we load up, because we now have a tradition where we spend 4 days nonstop. No.
You're grateful for that.
Excuse me, in Britain, shagging.
Shagging.
She just said shagging.
We bump uglies. No. No.
You
we
knock
we
boots?
Load up and we get as much food as we can, and we beat a video game together. Now, when I say together,
what does that mean,
we get into some kind of adventure video game like Zelda. Okay.
That's a great idea.
Now, when I say we, I just sit there and coach him through the worlds. Because I don't know if you guys have played a video game lately, but there's about 700 buttons on these things, and there's even a video screen on the controller. Yeah. So you have to look at two screens while you're playing.
Dual screen experience.
Yeah, it's very upsetting, and I just physically can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I have to sit there and navigate, and I look up cheats online, and I scream at him. I'm like, if you don't turn around and go get that treasure chest, I'm gonna break up with you. Like that's the point that we get drunk while we're doing it. It's great. I love it, and I highly recommend creating your own Thanksgiving tradition.
You know what they say behind every great male video game player?
Yeah.
Is a Sarah Schaefer berating that man.
That's right.
Yeah, it's
that's
greatness. Right.
That's a really moving story, Sarah, about your thing. That really makes me think I've been barking up the wrong tree with my Thanksgiving, where I've just been Googling fighting lesbians all day. Yeah, it's just, that's rewarding in its own way, but nothing like what you've been yeah. through. What about you, Nagin? Now, let me just declare, your parents are both from Iran?
They're from Iran, yeah. And I like how you turn yourself into an Iranian when you say that word.
Well, it's a very NPR thing, which is that we like to show off mm-hmm. that we can pronounce foreign words. Mm-hmm. Like, Nagin, I see that you're eating a croissant. You know, we always do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like...
It's very culturally sensitive. Very
it
sensitive.
Is.
Andy Barnes is very culturally sensitive.
I sure am. Yeah. I sure am. So so your parents, and where when they came from Iran, where did they sneak over to? I mean, move to? Where did they go to?
On muleback, they came to the United States. Mm-hmm. There was a spell in New Haven or whatever, but we ended up in Palm Springs, California, most of you. And for those of you who don't know, Palm Springs, California, like, it's in the desert of Southern California, and there's like two main populations. There's a huge, it's a retirement community, but it's also one of the top five gay cities in the country. So it's the kind of place where you find a lot of people like dancing to Lady Gaga while adjusting their catheters. That's where I grew up. And for Thanksgiving, I'm just going to assume that's where you were driving this conversation.
I was
Thanksgiving.
I was.
Okay, got it. So when I was growing up, so the third main population there are the Mexicans, actually. And growing
the
up,
Mexican.
I had, sorry,
the Mexicans.
The Mexicans. Okay, yeah. How do you pronounce?
Garatunia, are you now going to be sensitive for Mexicans too?
Somebody's got to stand up.
Isn't your plate already pretty full?
I'm just really hungry for justice. Man.
Come back for seconds this Thanksgiving justice season.
So there are the Mexicans.
As I was saying, the third main population is the Mexicans. And one of my best friends growing up, who later turned out to be actually a gay Mexican, which is a crossover category, you get 10 points for that. He would tell me about this really interesting cultural tradition among Mexican families where they would, instead of having like what we have, the traditional stuffed turkey, what Mexican families like to do is they have a giant stuffed bean, right? So basically, you don't know any Mexicans, Baratunde, clearly. So basically what they do... Hear me out. So this is what they do. They basically, they take a bean, right, and they grow it all year long until it's as large as a turkey, right? And then during the holidays, they stuff that bean with rice and salsa and smaller beans, right? And that's what they have during their holiday dinner.
Stuff that bean.
And so I, when my friend told me this story, I believed him. I went around telling every old gay person I could find this interesting tidbit about Mexican culture until I realized that he was lying like a Mexican. So...
By the way, I just want to say for the record, damn you for making me Google Mexican stuffed bean. Now the
You're
NSA
not alone,
thinks
listeners,
racist.
Baratunde did it too. You know, Nagin, I have partied at some of the gay nightlife destinations in Palm Springs.
Right,
and you're right.
As a homo American.
Yeah, you're right. The go-go dancers in Palm Springs are mature. They're lucky if they just go.
So James, this makes me ask you, what kind of Thanksgiving traditions or memories do you have?
I'm part Armenian. I have Armenian family members, so we like to have a traditional Armenian-American Thanksgiving experience where we sit down with a turkey and demand reparations.
Excellent. Let's hear it for our entire panel. Let's give thanks. Give thanks to them. Well, that is the end of round three, and now let's take a look at the final score. And folks, I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing Baratunde and Sarah stand at 8 points.
Woohoo, we won!
And Nagin and James, you also stand at 8 points. Now, In a situation like this, it's up to me as the host to decide who to throw the extra point to. And I actually go through a very simple but important calculus in a moment like this. I try to decide who, if they lose, will be the angriest and possibly retaliate upon me. Well, I'm happy to say that Baratunde, you and Sarah are the winners.
Yes!
9 points.
Still don't know what that means.
And let's also hear it for Nagin and James at 8 points.
Arbitrarily losers.
Arbitrarily losers. Sticking it to the Muslim yet again.
Well, that's our show. And one final word to our British listeners. As we Americans settle in to spend all of Thanksgiving surrounded by relatives, be thankful you don't have this holiday. Good night, everybody. Thank you. Let's hear it for the panel. The News Quiz USA was a joint production of the BBC and WNYC. It was presented by me, Andy Borowitz, with Baratunde Thurston, Sarah Schaefer, Nagin Farsad, and James Adomian. Additional material was by Carl Carter and Nagin Farsad. The producer was Sam Bryant.
The News Quiz USA was recorded in the Jerome L. Green Performance Space with production assistance from Ricardo Fernandez, Chase Coulpon, Bill Moss, Nancy May Sachow, and James Ramsey. The program was edited by Paul Schneider, and the executive producer was Chris Bannon.